Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Possibility Mindset Podcast. I'm Devin Henderson. I'm your host, and I believe that something greater is always possible for you. All right, Joel, before I introduce you formally, let me ask you, how were the breakfast tacos here at Etc. Shawnee?
Excellent. Good breakfast tacos, coffee, nice way to start the day. I'm a breakfast guy.
Yeah.
So give me eggs, give me some jalapenos in there, throw it in a taco, throw it in a burrito, throw it in a bowl, whatever it is. The breakfast tacos were excellent.
Awesome, man. That's what I'm talking. See, that's Etc. Shawnee. They do it upright. They're amazing here. So if you haven't tried Etc., come on down. Okay, we have a couple locations in KC, so give it a whirl. I'm kind of the guy who always gets the same thing. You know, as long as there's like meat, there's eggs, you know, sprinkle a little bacon, yeah, a little protein, and get some oatmeal in there, some fruit. I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to podcast at that point, which is saying a lot, I guess.
The oatmeal. I mean, you could be sleepy after this, but yet you're ready to go.
I think I'd be sleepy if it was like a waffle or a pancake. Yeah. You know, I feel like the oatmeal is like that lighter carb that kind of gives me wings, right. You know?
Which, by the way, they have the waffle and the pancake too, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But they do. Oh, they do have it all. Yeah, if you want it. Just me for like, I have to take it easy. Otherwise, it's you know, dangerous.
I'm with you.
Yeah, man. Well, awesome. Well, hey, for the full experience for this podcast, you know, go to YouTube, subscribe, like, share with your friends. We're going to have some awesome wisdom, information, stories for you today from Joel. So you're going to want to be sure to share this. So one more question for you, Joel, before we get to formally introducing you. Do you like to walk?
I do like to walk.
Okay. Do you like to walk? But this might separate us as like, okay. Yeah, okay. This might divide us a little bit. Do you like to walk barefoot?
I feel like, I know this isn't a trick question, but I feel like you're going to want me to say yes.
I want you to be honest. So even if you say no, we'll figure out. We'll still be friends.
Let's get there.
Yeah, yeah.
I typically walk with like something on that resembles shoes.
Okay, which is fine. That's fine. So the barefoot thing is kind of this culture. It's like this whole lifestyle shift of realizing that like being connected to the earth and the grass is good.
Grounding.
Right. There you go. You know, you understand.
I'm
around the
young kids, the athletes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, And so, you know, the earth is electric, our bodies are electric. But on top of that, like we're just really built and meant to walk barefoot, like our muscle structure, our bones and all that. So that's why I like to recommend Zero shoes. It's what I wear. It's honestly all I wear. I speak in zeros. I kick a soccer ball in zeros. I run, I walk. I would sleep in zeros if my wife would let me. I totally would. So go to zeroshoes.com/go/Devin just to check it out. See if it's for you. Just try your first pair. It really, honestly, for me, it's changed my life. I love these shoes. They're totally amazing. And it's also a way you could support this podcast. So you can find the link in the show notes, zeroshoes.com/go/Devin. All right. Well, Joel, congratulations.
Ooh, what did I do?
What'd you do?
I can't wait to find out.
You're the first guest to join us with our new podcast equipment.
See? Break it in.
I know. I was like, well, let's, you know, who's going to be the right guest to be the first person for the equipment? And that, or it just worked out that way, but a little bit of, you know, a little bit of destiny. It just worked out. So we got Zach behind the scenes doing his thing. He's awesome. So Zach, shout out. And so this is fun. So, you know, strap in, let's see how this goes.
Honored to be the first, whether it was by design or whether fate just brought us here. And I will say, as someone that, you know, has been in this business a long time, it's that people don't realize this, and you don't see it, you won't hear it, but it's nerve-wracking when you're trying out new things because you want to get it right, and you know that it's going to be better, but sometimes, like when we finish this later, you may say to me, oh, we forgot to roll. Can we do it again?
Right.
We've all been there, by the way.
Zach's like, oh, speaking of which, I forgot to hit
Zach's
record,
like,
you know?
We'll do that all the time in TV, too. Like, we'll finish a great interview, and then the photographer will say, like, did you want me to roll on that, by the way?
Oh, nice, so nice. I have a friend who's like, you'll tell like a 10-minute story. He's like, could you repeat that? Hey, and one thing also about this podcast, you may or may not know, we don't really like to edit a lot unless it's something a significant interruption. Yeah. And the reason I tell you that is because I'm going to ask Zach right now, hey, how are we looking? Like, are we both, I want Joel to be comfortable. Is he facing okay? Are we good?
Y'all are looking
All right. Zach's got like, leave us. Leave me out of this, dude. I like to work behind the scenes. Right. Don't even drop my name, man. Act like we don't know each other. Okay. Awesome, man. Well, I want to introduce you, and I keep saying, but this first. But we can't ignore this fact, okay? Last night, who won the Super Bowl again? I can't remember.
I think it was the Chiefs.
It was the Chiefs. Yeah. That's right. Now, this podcast isn't coming out for, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks after this, but we can't not talk about it, especially when you're the sports guy.
Yeah.
So, thoughts, feelings on how it all went down?
You know, it's all really interesting to me because, first off, it was a great game. And I think that
stellar.
Any game that goes down to the wire, let alone in overtime, is going to be a classic. It just is. It didn't feel like a great game for a while. It was pretty boring in the first half. There wasn't a lot of scoring, but the tension was there the whole game. You could feel the storylines mounting. I view games differently. I'm not a football expert. I covered football over the years. I can come up with a million people that know the game better than I do. But I know storylines. I think in storylines, and you could see it developing the whole time, right? That you could see it building. I kept saying to everyone that they're not playing that well, the Chiefs. Yet they're still one score away from winning this. And usually when you let a good team stay in a game that they don't have a business being in based on how they're playing, they find a way. And there's so many cool storylines with Mahomes and with Andy Reid, and I was telling you before that the greatest of all time find a way to do things that no one else can do. And Patrick Mahomes is in that category. And so, you know, for anyone that's checking out this podcast, if you're a Chiefs fan, even a few weeks later, you're still giddy over this. If you're not a Chiefs fan, you probably hate them. But I think ultimately you know you've arrived when you've gone from the darling, the beloved team in America, because everybody likes the small market Cinderella story, to being hated because we're sick of you. That's when you know you've started to create a legacy. But, yeah. You know, I just think, like, I've covered a million great games and bad games and everything in the middle and games that aren't too significant and games that are incredibly significant. And last night, just as a fan, falls under the category of one of the greats of all time. People will talk about that game for generations. And so just to be able to be in that moment, talk about being present, you know, that's what I want people to take out of last night's game. And if it's not your team, maybe something else will come up where it is your team, or maybe you feel like your team will never win it, and one day hopefully they do, and you get to enjoy it. Is you have to enjoy these moments because that – there's no guarantee they'll get back. They just keep finding a way back. That makes it even more special because you don't see it very often anymore.
Yeah, yeah, wow. And you know what? Chiefs fan or no Chiefs fan, all of us are Swifties.
Should be.
So there's something for everyone.
Should be. Well, you got
when
young
it comes
kids.
To the Chiefs. I do have
I'm
young
sure
kids.
I'm sure that some of your kids love her, right?
Yeah. We're counting how many times they showed her. We're right. Like, that's not enough. We need more Taylor. I don't know what the deal was.
I'm pretty sure not everybody in America feels that way. But I'll just say this. And somehow this whole thing turned into political, which is absurd. Like, that's just the world we live in. But I think what I say about Taylor Swift, and I now have a teenager and a 20-something, and my daughter is the teenager, and she likes to claim that she was a Kelce fan before she was a true Swiftie, although she liked her music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that my point here is that there's, whether you like the Chiefs or you don't, whether you now suddenly feel like you don't like her because of, I don't know why people wouldn't like her, she brings people together. She around the globe has this ability of being an unbelievable role model for young kids and especially young girls. And now it's really cool to me to, and I know they're skeptics, like, I can't imagine, I don't know, Devin, I mean, could you imagine living in her world and every step you take is chronicled by paparazzi and this and that? I feel like this is the most at that level since maybe Princess Diana. And she kind of has that feel, too, of someone that brings people together and does good around the world. Maybe, you know, I was watching the Beckham documentary on Netflix, Your Soccer Guy, and the level of where they were at, you know, Beckham and Posh Spice, neither one of them individually are greater than what Taylor Swift is worldwide, but maybe collectively they were bigger, where every step and move they take, and in his case, in England beloved until they decided they hated him because, you know, he messed up in one game. I can't imagine what it would be like to live in that world. So I get why there are skeptics. Oh, you know, maybe it's just a made-for-TV thing, or maybe it's a whatever. They look pretty genuinely happy, and I think it's pretty cool to watch all that playing out. Like, who roots against love?
I don't know. Who roots against love? I think that's the name of this episode. There you go. Who roots against love? Man, that's so good. Well, this is a man who really doesn't need an introduction, but why not, right? I mean, let's do it. And our speeches are kind of like this. We tell a story, we hook them in, then they get the intro and the why and where we're going. That's so right. Let's jump into it. Everybody, this is Joel Goldberg, and you probably know him from the Kansas City Royals post-game shows. So a little fun facts that you probably don't know. He's been married almost 25 years, two kids in college. Mm-hmm. I mean, this man has really, truly rounded the bases, as he likes to say. He's been on TV for 29 years, and the last 16 have been the pre- and post-game show, like I mentioned, with the Royals, and you get to travel with them, I mean, wherever they go. You are all over the place. That's to the moon and back, right? Mm-hmm. You've dodged a lot of Gatorade buckets. I'm sure Andy Reid would appreciate that kind of nimbleness, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. So he got nailed with some purple Gatorade last night. You won an Emmy. I have a daughter named Emmy. So, nice. But we're talking about the award. You won an Emmy Award for reporting in 2001. Congratulations,
thank
man.
Thank you.
Yeah, because you've been, I mean, you've been also Wisconsin and St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, and you did, speaking of Super Bowl, you did some Super Bowl work with the Rams.
Yep.
Back when
they had a football team.
Back when they had a football team. There you go. Yeah. All right. So his podcast, which I was actually on recently, Rounding the Bases with Joel Goldberg. That's him, in case you know, checked out at some point. That began in 2017. A lot of kind of many guests, right? Tech Nine, who's the KC native, right?
Yep, KC native.
Yeah, Bob Costas. Mm-hmm. And then I looked it up so I could say my episode is 911.
Yes.
So there you go, 911. Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's a lot of episodes you've done. I'm on, I think this is 22 or 23. Just, so
you know,
watch
it's a
out.
Long, it's a long
I'm going to catch you.
It's a long haul, not a competition.
Yeah, man. And he has a book called Small Ball, Big Results. I like that. His speaking, which you sent me in the mail, and I need to read. It's sitting on my desk.
You don't have to. I mean, it's not an obligation.
I don't have to. Okay.
There'll be no test.
Okay. Well, it takes the pressure off, but, you know, I still want to read it.
Yeah, pick up a chapter here.
So there you go. There you go. He started his speaking business back in 2016, and he's kind of like me in the sense that, like we talked about on your podcast, baseball is your metaphor for life. Magic is my metaphor for life, but you like to use those baseball stories when you do as teaching and storytelling mechanisms, right? The same way that I would use magic. So, yeah.
100%. And I think that's, like I would say, there aren't a lot of people that could do what Devin does, the magic, the juggling, all of this type of stuff. So I, you know, there's one side of me that says, well, I can't put myself in your world because I can't do any of those things. What I do know is that I can storytell and make that point using that metaphor the way you do with your magic mind is usually baseball and the people that I meet and tying it together. I think that in the end, the good speakers are great storytellers and they're dot connectors. We're connecting dots for people. We're not telling anyone, generally, we're not telling anyone anything they haven't heard before. Hopefully we're doing it in a different way that connects those dots in a way that gives you those aha moments. Oh yeah, now I get that. And so that's the commonality between us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so easy to compare and look at another speaker. And I mean, you can all relate to this too, whatever industry you're in, just look at someone else and say, I don't have that. You know, I call it the illusion of comparison, that it's like, I can't do that. Well, you have your own brilliance, you know, your own ingenuity. You can be innovative and bring out the best you. And I mean, it all sounds, you know, cliche, cheesy, if you will, but I mean, it's true, you know, and we see it play out in our industry all the time. So, one last thing I want to mention, biographical wise is some of your favorite TV interviews. You've done Rowdy Roddy Piper, who's the Canadian wrestler.
I think he was American, I believe.
Okay.
I don't think
he
was Canadian.
Okay.
I know he always
talked
about the Scottish background. I don't know how much of that was real or not real, but yeah, he was amazing.
Okay, awesome, man. That's fun. And then the other one was Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
So I you know, it's so tempting to just be like, Joel, tell me what it's like to be on the field with the Royals after the game. I want to hear all that, but I really also just want to hear a lot about your personal life, what you do on stage, and the message that you bring to your audiences. Because with this speaking business that you have, I mean, you really are changing lives, transforming people, and through your book too. And so I want to hear about all of it, but I have to kind of ask one fanboy question.
Yeah.
You got to interview Will Ferrell. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, comedy legend. I mean, I love Elf, Anchorman. You know, it's like, what was that like?
Yeah. Elf, Anchorman, old school. We could go on and
Saturday
on.
Night Live. I mean, yeah.
All of it. I mean, he's a legend. Really nice guy, by the way, too. So was the late Rowdy Roddy Piper. He was a sweetheart of a guy. Will Ferrell, I'll take you back. I think it was 2011. For those that know, the Royals have this big, well, it's not the Royals deal, but the big slick charity event every single year, started by Paul Rudd and Rob Riggle and Jason Sudeikis. And eventually they added Eric Stone Street and Heidi Gardner and all these local famous comedians. And the first year, and they bring in friends from around the country, and there are a lot of, you know, actors that you've seen around, maybe, you know, not at the level of a Paul Rudd, all of them. Certainly not at the level of a Will Ferrell. But they're all highly accomplished, really skilled, funny people that have been on SNL and this and that. And there's always a connection between these guys. He knows, you know, this guy is the opening act for Jimmy Fallon and Seth Herzog. And he goes back to this point with Paul Rudd. You know, they all know each other in New York or wherever it is. And the first year they do this big slick to raise money for Children's Mercy. It's a brand new charity they're starting, which has now been going 13 years. They've raised millions and millions and millions of dollars. Will Ferrell was one of the guests. And at that point, they would give me a full inning in the dugout suites. So right along the third base side, behind third base, dugouts, two dugout suites. And they would give me a full inning to interview these celebrities. Now we do it in a half inning because it's like, all right, you know, we've been there, done that. They've got a lot of obligations.
Yeah.
And my game plan, since I had a full inning, was I'm going to sit the first half and interview Rudd, Riggle, and Sudeikis. This is pre-Ted Lasso, but they were all, you know, Sudeikis had been a star on SNL. Everybody knew who Paul Rudd was. Riggle's been in some of the, you know, greatest roles, The Hangover with the taser scene, on and on. And that's going to be enough. And then I'm going to see if I can get up the courage in the bottom of the inning. I think it was the third inning. I'm going to try to get up the courage to go. I think Will Ferrell was inside. There's an inside part of the suite, and then you can come outside. You're right along the baseline. In between innings during the commercial, I'll go in and ask if he'll do it. And if, you know, if he's a jerk or whatever, then it's fine. Like, you don't know. Like, you know, good guy, bad guy, leave me alone. I'm not doing this. I mean,
yeah.
I don't even know that makes you a jerk. If you're getting pulled in a million directions all day long, and then that's what I tell people all the time, too. Maybe you got them at the wrong moment. So I don't know, not even halfway into this interview with Sudeikis and Rudd and Riggle, and up walks Will Ferrell and just interrupts the interview. He just walks in, and so somebody hands him a microphone, and he just, for the next 10 minutes, takes over in what was basically, I had a front row seat with an occasional chime in to keep things moving, front row seat to Night at the Improv with Will Ferrell and those guys, and they're all...
Man.
They're all kind of, you know, in deference to him. Like, they all, every one of those guys can run circles around any normal person in terms of the way their mind thinks and how quick.
Sure.
But now they want Will Ferrell on center stage.
It's like they got Robin Williams in the room now, right?
Yeah, that's
just
exactly
like,
it.
You can't compete. Yeah.
And I realized, that was the first year that I realized, because I do it every year with them now, minus Will Ferrell, just set it up for them and then shut up. And then when it runs its course and they need another direction, throw something out there. And so he walks in, they hand him a microphone, and he starts screaming out to the field, yelling at Royals pitcher Bruce Chen, "Come on, Chen." And like, what I don't like his body language. He's lollygagging. I don't like that. And so I say, ladies and gentlemen, Will Ferrell's joining us. Will, in to support your friend's charity? And he just looks at me and he goes, just deadpan, "No. No, I'm just passing through Kansas City as I do every year in June." And they're like, "Really?" Oh, you know, I could hear, I don't know if it was Rob Riggle or someone saying, "Really? Where were you going that you just were passing through here?" "Well, I had some seats up in the upper deck. I don't know how I ended up down here. On my way to Branson to do a show." Oh, what's the show about?" They just know, just keep poking the bear, right?
Yeah.
"Oh, what's the show about?" It's a one-man show about the history of banjos. And it's something like, it's 3 hours long with 20 acts or whatever he said. And It's called America's Got Back, and it's about a back tattoo of the American flag, and just goes on and on and on and on.
Oh my gosh!
And I'm like, they're just creating the story, and I'm just gonna sit here and relish in it. So. He couldn't have been nicer, and you know, same thing to Rowdy Roddy Piper. Once that camera's on, mm-hmm. that switch turns,
oh, man.
And it's like you're just watching television gold.
That is, man, what a crazy opportunity. I'm getting starstruck for you.
You know what
from
you
that
learned,
moment
though?
From forever ago. That's so cool.
You know what you learn, and it's not true for all of them, but you just learn they're people. I mean, they're all people, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. And most of them are pretty good guys. And then what I know, and it's the same thing with the athletes, even though I'm a lot closer with the athletes because I'm around them every day. If you give people the right amount of space and respect the space that they need, they're more likely to come back.
Mm.
You know, and so, yes, it'd be great to chat with, like, as soon as we're done, I'd love to sit there and talk for 20 minutes because how cool would that be? But you know what? They got other stuff to do. So just respect people's space. When you do that, they understand that they're probably going to do a quick something that helps support something, and they'll give you hopefully their best. And every now and then they don't. But that was a pretty cool one.
Well, what a mark of a pro for you, rolling with the punches and not being like, guys, can we bring this back? I have questions for – but just letting that play out. That's brilliant. I don't think a lot of people would – I don't know. I imagine like maybe some people wouldn't have that awareness and then would create it awkward and squelch that whole comedy journey that they're taking you on. So cool that you just sat back and let it happen.
It's kind of my interviewing style anyway. And I want to be careful with saying that this doesn't mean be unprepared. There's a danger if you're a guy that likes to ad lib and likes to roll with it, that wants to play off of the answers and doesn't want to get trapped by a specific set list, so to speak, right? You know, it's more like, I don't know, like a jam band, like let's just go with the flow. But there's a danger to get lazy and not do your homework. I think you still need to be able to do you have to be able to do your homework. You still need to, you know, I always say I could show up and do a show, you know, as we're doing this right now, it's February, we're still about 6 weeks from opening day. If you told me that opening day was in 5 minutes and that you got to go on the air and do your first show in 6 months in 5 minutes, I'd be like, great. Just help me know where we're going next, and we'll get there. My fear would be, am I dressed right? Because I'm not going to be ready in 5 minutes, but if this is good, let's go.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. If you were to drop me, say, in, I don't know, drop me in Miami and say, hey, go host the soccer team's pregame show in 5 minutes, and I'd be like, okay, I know they got Messi, but I don't really know anything else, and, oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to do here. So you have to have your background, but I think and look, some people, Devin, are they're script people. They need that structure. And I'm not saying that's bad. If you're someone, and this is not just a TV thing or a speaking thing, this is a presentation, this is a boardroom, this is anything.
Yeah.
If you're someone that really wants to, you know, follow that exact script and you need that, and that's where you're at your best, then that's what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately, if you know what you're talking about, you've done your homework, you know, I know maybe not everything about the Royals, but I know enough to get me by day after day after day on a bad day. If on a bad day, your worst is still good enough, then trust your instincts and listen a little bit. Because when you're deep into a script, you tend to miss what's going on and developing in the moment. And nothing ever goes exactly to plan. That's what I love about live television that I believe has prepared me for so much in life. And you know this from a speaking standpoint. When does everything, when you go speak to a group on stage, when does everything go exactly as planned?
It's like a wedding.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And probably the best wedding planners understand that something's going to go wrong. And probably when that something goes wrong, it's something that they've seen in some form or another before. And so instead of panicking, it's like, boy, I wish this didn't happen, but all right, let's figure it out and move on.
Yeah.
And that's a very comforting thing, not just for you as a speaker, not just for me as a speaker or as a broadcaster, but hopefully for everyone around you, including the audience who may not even know anything's gone wrong.
Well, and what audiences really appreciate today is audience interaction, facilitation, right? Mm-hmm. And so I look at a podcast the same way, like I'm facilitating, right? We're trying to create this conversation. And I was given some really good advice when I started podcasting, like, don't have a list of questions, you know, maybe as a backup, maybe just a few kind of go-tos in case you hit a dead end and you go blank. But the whole idea is just to be genuinely curious, right? Like, if you're just curious, because anything you might say might open up a question to me. And if I'm like, if I'm asking that, they might be asking that too. So don't let that, like, ask that question so that it can go deeper, because you never know what doors that might open up. And that's part of the fun of just, you know, I don't look at it as winging it. I look at it as like just being curious, and that's the plan, right? And if you stick to that plan, I mean, it's going to go awesome places that you couldn't have planned in your formatted questions.
That's right. And if it's not winging it, again, if you've done your background and you have, it's like when you're speaking or when I'm speaking, and you'll get some people, and I'm not talking money here, but you'll get some people that say, wait a minute, they're going to pay you X amount of dollars for an hour? Wow, that's a pretty good gig. And it's like, no, they're paying us for a lifetime's worth of experience.
Yes.
You're sharing a lifetime's worth of experience in 1 hour. Mm. And that's what this is. It's not winging it. It's an ability to pivot. It's an ability in the moment to go where the conversation's taking you, where whatever, you know, the moment is taking you. There's always a structure. There's always a framework. On our pregame show and our postgame show, we don't have one script outside of some commercial billboard reads or any promos that I've got to read that they want that copy to be right. And, you know, I've got to get that. But for the most part, I've got a page of notes. Like, I wouldn't even call it notes, but just bullet points of either a key stat or a point or a word that I want to mention. I find, again, everybody's different. I find that the less words I have written down or memorized, the better that I'm at, the better I'm at. Mm-hmm. And I'll see it, especially early in the season, where I'll look down. I do everything digitally on my iPad, but I'll look down and I'll have full sentences written out. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, right. That's not you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's just sometimes you get pulled into that, and then you got to go back and trust your instincts. Yeah. And you're right. Like, and I see it a lot too. People will say, somebody will bring up, you know, whatever. Oh wait, you just brought up magic. Well, I was going to ask that 5 questions later. So hold on. I'll get back to that. Mm-hmm. I got to go to this question next.
Oh, right.
Essentially is what they're saying.
Yes.
It's like, well, just why don't you just go there now?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The conversation took you there. Just go there now. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you've got, like for me on my podcast, I have only 3, and you went through these. I only have 3 scripted questions. And it was never my goal to have any. And then what I realized was that I liked asking from that baseball standpoint, using the metaphor, or in this case as an analogy, I guess, what's the biggest home run you've hit? No, it is a metaphor. Mm. What's the biggest home run you've hit? What's the biggest swing and miss you've taken? Yep. And what is small ball? What are the little things? So I knew I'd want to ask every guest that. It led to a lot of great content. Content still does. But I also knew that it wasn't fair to ask them those questions if they hadn't thought about them, and it does nobody any good to have 30 seconds of trying to come up with an answer that we could edit out, but why not at least let them put a little thought into it?
Yeah.
Otherwise, after that, I usually do 4 final questions to round the bases, and I jot down a couple notes of things I'd like to do, but oftentimes those final questions end up popping into my head as the show is going on based on some of their answers.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of freeing thing, I think.
You're giving me all kinds of ideas right now.
It's good.
So if I'm typing over here, it's because I'm learning from you. That's great. So, okay, so now you're doing Kansas City Royals post-game shows. You know, you have a speaking business. Take me back a little bit, Joel. Like, what first got you interested in broadcasting?
Yeah, the kind of fun story I'll tell, and I'll tell this to audiences too, And it's not incorrect. I can't piece together everything at a young age. This is what I remember, and it's true, is that somewhere in first or second grade, and I say first or second because my first grade teacher grew up outside of Philadelphia in New Jersey before moving to Chicago when I was 13. Our first grade teacher moved up with us to second grade. So somewhere in that 2-year span, whether it was first or second grade, this teacher, Mrs. Dunwoody, who I remember very well because my parents over the years like became friends with her well beyond when we left and kept in touch with her, and she's a sweet lady. And she would complain to my parents that I was disrupting class at, you know, so 7 or 8 years old, giving everybody the updates of the scores and the games and the recaps from the night before. Now, let's keep in mind, this is the 1980s. There's I mean, not that a whole lot of first and second graders probably have phones coming into class, but you know, this is pre-internet, pre all of that stuff. You got your sports information either from watching the news or maybe a game. It's not like there were 100 games on and ESPN and this and that, right? I mean, there was cable was still not that expansive. So I was disrupting class, giving sports updates basically as a 7 and 8 year old. And so that I remember is the first signs of it. And then I know as a teenager.
And your teacher had to deal with this for 2 years because she, right. I think in the teaching industry, they call it looping when you go from looping. One grade. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, she got 2 years of Joel Goldberg.
She got stuck with the Goldberg loop. And I don't know when it was like, I want to do that. I just know that I loved watching the local sports guy on the news back then and that I wanted to either be that or I wanted to be the play-by-play guy. And as I got older and, you know, teenage years, I used to sit there and watch games, you know, my parents' house or in a room and turn the volume down and pretend to be the announcer,
oh, nice.
Which is the way you tell people
nice.
To practice now anyways. But that's what I was doing. And so I knew from – I don't remember ever wanting to do anything else.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Wow, that's awesome. So how does that grow then? Because, I mean, you know, we talk about possibilities on this podcast. And for you, that was – it wasn't something that someone said, Joel, I want you to go and start.
Right.
You knew that you wanted to do it. And it makes me think of me with magic. I was like, you can't stop me, right? And you don't have to tell me how. I'm just going to find a way. How did that go into now I'm going to be a professional sports broadcaster?
Yeah.
And what was the evolution like?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing I would say, too, and this applies to everyone, is that you talk about possibilities.
Yeah.
What exists today, or maybe I should say what could exist in 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, 3 years, I don't know. What could exist then may not even exist now.
Right.
So when you talk about possibilities, I'm not even sure that you need to see it. You just need to be open to it.
Mm.
Because I'll take you back to 1994, which is when I graduate from the University of Wisconsin in Madison, Wisconsin, and I want to be on TV. And really now my background and my path is to be on local television news. Because my final 2 years at Wisconsin, I got an internship with the NBC television station. I think those internships were probably supposed to be a one-month thing. They usually are. It's usually an unpaid, get some credit so that we can justify, you know, the free labor. And when I say labor, I mean, it's not like you're lifting a lot of heavy things or whatever. A lot of times you're sitting behind a television watching a game and writing down what time the key plays happen.
It's labor,
so put them together.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It's grunt work.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they really, if they were paying attention or they just liked me, but they had me do 4 semesters. So I had 2 years of working for this NBC television station.
It came back on you, the looping thing. Now you're having
to
put it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And good call. And I was able to really build some trust and relationships with the people that I was working for. These were some of my earliest influences. I wanted to be them. I wanted to be them when I was a kid without knowing who they were. Now I meet these guys and now I'm trying to be them. And ultimately I did. And so I graduate from Wisconsin in May of 94. I'm sending resume tapes all over the country. And I joke now that nowadays, the kids just send a YouTube link. Mm. Much easier, right? Well, or they have it, and they got LinkedIn, and they got email, yeah. And all this type of stuff. Well, guess what? So does everyone else. So in the television world, if you're applying for a TV job, and in 94, if you want to get on TV, you're going to a local news station, and you're starting small. Most people get out of it, because why would you want to make no money with that college degree and have to relocate to a small town? I knew that that was the only path, and so there was never a second guessing of the first salary that was less than $15,000 a year. But hey, I'm off and running. I'm in TV. But let's say that you're applying for a television job, and I make these numbers up. But let's say there are 10,000 kids coming out of undergraduate and more grad school and all that too. But let's say there are 10,000 kids that want to get on TV in any given year. And I don't know if it's 5,000 or 20,000, whatever it is, it's a lot of people. Let's say there's 10,000 kids getting out of college, 22-year-olds or whatever, that don't really know a whole lot of what they're doing, that want to get on TV. And of those 10,000, there might be 50 jobs out there, if that. At any given moment, there might be 25, maybe 50. How are you going to be one of the 50 out of 10,000 to do this? When nobody's really that great. They don't have a lot of experience. And so I got rejected everywhere that I went. I was mailing out these tapes, and I have a collection of rejection letters. They all sent rejection letters back. And I got desperate, and I started to make phone calls instead. I started cold calling. And I tell this because most people hate cold calling, myself included, but if you want it bad enough, you'll do whatever it takes. And I was eyeballing going back to the local hot dog stand restaurant where I worked in suburban Chicago. And they, by the way, would have paid me about twice as much as I made in television to start to manage the restaurant. And I started calling. I remember it was my parents' landline. I had a script written out, and it would be the same thing every time.
Speaking
and
of scripts, right?
Yeah, that was
this
the
is
script.
Where you developed your hate for scripts, right?
Yeah, and I also had no confidence of how to quote unquote wing it, how to think off the top of my head. That thought, even in television at that point, was mortifying to me because I was too worried about am I looking at the camera right? Am I standing right? Am I this? Am I that? Am I projector? Like, there's so many million. It's kind of like I'm not a golfer once or twice a year. It's kind of like a golf swing. Like, how do I get done what I need to do when I'm thinking of 100 things? So I didn't have that comfort level yet. And so I'm reading off of this script. I would call Devin, the TV station. There were no real websites yet. And the receptionist would answer, and I'd say, "Hi, can you tell me who your news director is?" "Yes, it's Devin Henderson." "Okay, thanks." Click, 10 minutes later. It's like when you're younger and you wanted to call the girl, and you're thinking, okay, when's the right time to do it? And when's the next, when can I call back? And, oh, they didn't answer, or this mom, when I, overthinking.
Not that
the heck
you were
over,
yeah, I was going to say, not that you were overthinking.
Not at all.
I am an overthinker, so I can relate.
I would wait 10 minutes after I hung up on the receptionist and then call back again. "Hi, can I speak with Devin Henderson?"
Would you do it in a different voice?
No, I thought about it, though.
Like you're trick-or-treating, you come back in a different costume.
The whole thing is just preposterous. And so, but the conversation, then reading from the script, "Hi, I'm Joel Goldberg. I recently graduated from the University of Wisconsin. I understand you don't have a job opening right now, but I'm passing through town next week."
With Will Ferrell. On the way to Branson.
I'm on my way to Branson.
To do the banjo show.
And neither of us are going to any of those places. "But I'm on my way, or I'm passing through, and would you be around on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday? Because I'd love to hand deliver a tape and meet you." And all but one said yes. And the one that said no said, "I can't guarantee I'm going to be there. And I already found another TV station in that town, so I went anyway and I dropped it off."
So how many how many people were there?
Over 20.
Wow, that's a good success.
And I started driving
like
all over the country.
Right?
Because, look, if you're them, you've probably been in my shoes at a certain point.
Yeah.
You hear from a million people, and if someone's willing to take that extra step, I do this too now. I mean, it's great to be able to give back, and who knows, maybe you actually end up with a lead. And what happened is that instead of being, see, when you're applying for something and everybody else is applying, you have to hope that you make it to the front of the stack. You have to hope that they actually ever even see you. You don't know that they're going to look at you or not. What I guaranteed was that when a job opening came up, I was going to be in the top of the line because they had met me. And it was the earliest lesson to me. I didn't even grasp it at the time. It just was instinctual. It was the earliest lesson to me that relationships matter, that relationships and building trust, which is what I speak about now, matter, because when you can get to know somebody, you've got a chance. If you don't get to know somebody, it's a complete shot in the dark, and that's what opened the door. But going back to the original two, if you look at what I'm doing nowadays, I host a pre and a post game show. So it's over 300 shows a summer. We do close to 160 games.
If you were wondering why he's so polished, now you know.
Well, it's all debatable. It's all a matter of perspective, too, in our
and
business.
Humble. Look at that. Wow.
Look, they may love you. They may hate you. But pre-game, post-game show pretty much every day for 6 months straight, hosting a podcast. First off, none of those things existed when I broke into television. Mm. There weren't pre- and post-game shows. You might have like a Sunday night wrap-up show on the local news for sports.
Right.
We might have a special high school football Friday show or something like that. There were no pre- and post-game shows. There were no sideline reporters. I'm also the in-game reporter by the dugout with the Royals. Those roles, there were three or four guys doing that on a national broadcast for college football maybe or NFL, and that was it. So everything that I'm doing today was really it manifested over time. None of it existed back then. And so that's the beauty of it. You jump in and then you let it go where it takes you.
Yeah. What I love about your story, first of all, it reflects mine and my beginning and cold calling. Because for me, it was restaurants. I thought if I could just land a couple of restaurant gigs doing tableside magic, that would pave the way. Because then it's like making connections, like the relationships factor you're talking about, handing out the business card, getting hired for private parties, getting hired for corporate events, but walking into the restaurants, asking who the general manager was, you know, because the phone thing didn't work for me at first. They were like, goodbye.
Yep.
So then I learned, okay, you got to go in, you got to ask for the GM, and then you've got to like be ready with your script, right? Yep. For me, it was like my script was to have a deck of cards on me and something that looked like a professional business card and to go in. But what I really love about your story, you had a possibility mindset because someone could have shut you down and been like, Joel, there's 20,000 students who want to do what you do. There's no way. Find something else. But you said, what else is possible? What if there is a way? What if I go and visit, reach out to 20 people and drive around the country and do this? And I mean, if you hadn't had a possibility mindset, none of that would have ever happened.
You know, what's interesting too, is that I really have no idea or recollection if anybody told me to do that or if I just did it. But it's advice that I've given to every young broadcaster ever since. Most of the time I'll get a look like, what language are you speaking? And I'm like, they're never going
to
do
like,
it.
Like, you want me to do what?
Right.
Like, that's insane.
And
yeah,
I get it, but the odds are you're not going to make it in this business.
Right.
But I could tell the ones that will do it. It's just different. We're in a different age now where everything is so instant and everything, and everybody wants instant. I mean, that's what I feel most concerned about for the younger generation. And I'm not an anti, like, where the younger generation is taking us is a great thing. What's gone on in the world and the change we've had post the pandemic, you know, more freedom in the workplace, taking care of yourself, mental health, all of these type of things, I think are a positive step, and it'll keep going in different directions. But my fear is just that with that convenience becomes sometimes a lack of inability to do face-to-face. And we don't have to do face-to-face all the time. But what ended up ultimately getting me in this business, and you could say, that's 30 years ago. I mean, the world has changed. But whether it's face-to-face or a connection on a Zoom or whatever it is, how did you get in? You got in by getting face-to-face with those GMs. I got in by getting face-to-face with those news directors around the country. And what I tell anyone that asks me, especially if they're asking me early enough, hey, I want to get into TV. I get this all the time. There's not a week that goes by that someone isn't asking to pick my brain on how to get on TV, which is incredibly humbling that I've been doing this so long that somebody would want to know. And I say, you need to keep doing anything and everything you can over and over again. By the way, this is a lesson for any business, that it's all about repetition, right? How are you so comfortable doing all the magic and getting on stage without getting nervous and freaked out and all that? Because you've done it over and over and over again. Oh my gosh, Devin Henderson, look at how crazy all that stuff he does. It's not crazy to you. You know it's crazy to everyone else. Mm-hmm. It's not crazy to you because you've done it over and over again. Oh my gosh, Joel Goldberg gets in front of the television camera every time and he never looks nervous. And I don't always understand what the heck he's talking about, but he seems really calm out there. Well, because I've done it thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And so the two pieces of advice I give, you know, young aspiring broadcasters is do anything and everything you can over and over again, because everything you do is just experiences along the way in the journey. That's all it is. You'll never look back at any of them or almost any of them and say, hey, I remember that time when it's not even going to be a memory. But what it will do is build up muscle memory. It will make you more comfortable. It will allow you to fail. So that's the first piece. And the second piece, I think, to me, is that you're in the business of collecting people. Mm-hmm. Collect people every step of the way. You never know who that next person is that could be your boss or know your boss or be able to be your advocate. But the way you get them to advocate for you, the way that you get them to be that person that can help you is by understanding boundaries, reading the room. So you collect these people and then you be someone that they're willing to hear, that they're excited to hear from, which means you don't bother anyone too much. You know the right time. When's the right time? When's the wrong time? And suddenly, you know, all these, like I'll hear from a college kid, hey, I'm broadcasting, you know, our local blah, blah, blah games. I'm like, great. Every time that the other school comes in, meet their broadcaster, meet their media, meet their coaches, meet everybody you can along the way, because you never know who that next person is that might open a door for you. And so you're in control of that and how you go about it.
Yeah. So repetitions, relationships.
That's it.
Boom.
That's it.
I love it, man. I love it. So let's jump to the stage, because now you speak about your experiences in a way that other people can say, oh, wow, those are some good, that's some good life wisdom, life hacks, mindset tools, whatever you call them. What do you speak about? How do you use your baseball analogy and your broadcast and experiences to help people live better lives?
Well, it all started with, and I just kind of stumbled into this as a side hustle, and then it became a main hustle. And then it was like, I think some people still think it's just this little side hustle. And it's like, it's 1A, 1B with my baseball schedule. And so I, you know, it's everything to me. And I thought when I started this, someone had given me the suggestion, you know, I think you could be good at this. I'm like, man, spoken to Rotary clubs. I don't know. Like, you know, there's a difference, right? You know, yeah. you go speak to a Rotary club, a church group. It's, you know, it's kind of community engagement. You're giving an update on the team. Now somebody wants to pay you. And the question, at least in my mind from day one, was if they're going to pay me, then what are they going to pay me to do? Like, nobody's going to pay you to give an update on how the Royals are going to do this year. Hey, thanks for coming out. What do you think the Royals are going to do this year? Well, I think they're going to win X amount of games. Great. Here's a check. You know, it just doesn't. There's some entertainment, Q&A.
Yeah.
What's the takeaway? What's the message? So I thought, you know, I watched the Royals go from one of the worst franchises in baseball to a championship. And they, yeah, they had good talent, but really what they prided themselves on was building a culture, a championship culture. And I thought, well, boy, that's relatable to any profession. So at first I started talking about championship culture. That's small ball, big results. What are the little things that add up to the big results? And I had all these different topics.
And by the way, for those of you that maybe aren't Kansas City savvy, they won the world championship back in 2015, 15. Right? It was when, and it had been since 85 yeah. when they won their,
so
their
30
last
year
one.
Drought.
30 years, yeah.
There's so many cool stories with that. Again, I'm in my role traveling with the team and doing all the interviews and the pre and post game show. I'm the fly on the wall. I'm the fly on the wall that everybody wishes they could be. And so I always understand that in my role in TV, I get to share some of that. What I've found out is that I get to share a lot more of it when I'm not on TV. Instead of a 30-second
right.
or a 1-minute report, I've got close to an hour to handcraft this message to make people better, expand these stories, challenge them, get them thinking in a different way.
And with the World Series under the belt of the Royals, I mean, you got a lot of leverage as a speaker. Like, you're coming, you know.
It helps.
Yeah, it helps.
But, you know, we're also now 9 years from that. And so it's like, but I also believe, now you don't get as much attention, that when a team, and last year I covered a Kansas City Royals team that lost 106 games out of 62, tied for the most they'd ever lost. And I would say that there were a lot of lessons learned from that failure that I could also use to help people. Along the way, and you remember this too, like in the early years, you're trying to figure out what's the message that resonates. Do I want to go here, 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 here? And eventually you find that sweet spot. And for me right now, it's trust. I think that the number one topic that I talked about in every culture speech was trust. And just finally said, you know what, let's hone in on that, because there's not a story I tell that doesn't involve trust. Every story I tell involves trust. And it's what I have to do every single day. I think sometimes people assume that because I've done this so long that it's easy, right, that I'm just living this world with all these athletes, and I do. But I could throw that away tomorrow. I'm not a former player. Most of my fellow broadcasters played professionally. I never did anything like that. I just love to talk about it from all the way back in first and second grade, right? Yeah. So I feel like I have to earn the respect of those players and the fans, for that matter, every single day that I'm there, and even in the off season if there are opportunities to touch base. So I have this lifetime of experience of building trust and getting results in a way that's all, you know, storytelling based. I mean, I'm a storyteller to begin with. Now I get to bring it on stage. And so I think, you know, I do think we all like to be that fly on the wall. We all like a peek behind the curtain. You and I are sitting here in Kansas right now, and we could do all kinds of fun things about the Wizard of Oz. Sometimes I feel like I'm the Wizard of Oz in the sense that I get to go places that no one gets to go. Mm-hmm. And now if I could take those experiences and shape them in a way that allows somebody to go back to their company and be better, especially in a day and age right now where we're not communicating and connecting the way we used to. The other thing too, Devin, is that as I get older, and I joke that, because, well, of course, we all get older, but every day that I'm in this game, I keep getting older and the players keep getting younger. And that's not an exaggeration because every player that I covered when I got into this game is retired and I'm still here. And guys that I covered that were just coming into their prime when the Royals won the World Series in 15, Salvador Perez is a great example. This baseball season coming up, opening day March 28th, will be my 14th season with Salvador Perez, the longest that I've ever been with any athlete.
That's a long time.
The chemistry and the connection that he and I have is better than anyone that I've ever covered. And this comes from a 51-year-old guy that grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia and Chicago, and a 33 or 34. He'll be 34. He's April of 90, I believe. He'll be 34 in May. I think he's May. So a 34-year-old guy that grew up in a single-parent household, raised by his mother and his grandmother in Venezuela, and the guy 17 years older, you know, that was graduating high school as this guy was born in another country. Like, we have nothing in common, and yet the bond that he and I have is so good, and I could throw that away tomorrow if I don't go about things the right way. And so I have this experience of being able to connect and earn the trust of athletes that nowadays are almost half my age. He's one of the older ones, Salvador Perez. The guy that's now the up-and-coming superstar, the expected Patrick Mahomes in baseball of Kansas City, a good friend now of Mahomes, Bobby Witt Jr., just signs a $289 million contract to be here long-term, at least 7 years, as many as 14. He's 23.
Wow.
And I'm 51. You know, he's 2 years older than my oldest. If I can't connect with that younger generation and understand what makes them tick, I become irrelevant in this business. So there are a lot of lessons that play out in the, what I call the quote-unquote real world.
Yeah. So you've got several topics. We could go deep, and it would take us hours for me to ask all my questions about trust. How do you develop trust? How do you keep that relationship going for so long? And we don't have time for all those questions, but also you mentioned failure. I mean, you have all these different topics, right? And so what do you say to the meeting planner when they, you know, I know you have a manager, Charlotte, who's amazing. And when they say, hey, what's Joel going to teach our people? We've looked at his website. We just need to give us a synopsis. What are they going to go do differently because they had Joel speak?
And I think, again, it does all start with trust. I mean, baseball, sport of failure, great teaching, all that type of stuff. But how to better connect with the people internally and externally within their worlds, and how to do it quickly, but more importantly, how to do it over the long term and how to sustain it. Because in the end, I'm not in the baseball business any more than you were in the magic business.
Right.
We're in the people business.
Yeah.
That's it. I just happen to be living in this world of being in the people business with some people that are doing freakish things that most of us don't do. And I get the free pass to be in there. No different than you living in that magic world. Not a whole lot of people understand that. So you as a speaker can go and say, hey, I'm going to do all this cool magic stuff. And I can go in there and say, I'm going to tell you the coolest baseball stories. Great. Awesome. We'll laugh and we'll have fun. But what are the takeaways? And when you have a takeaway to me, that's where you find that success. To me, if I can go in there in front of an audience and explain to them why I failed to connect with Albert Pujols, probably the greatest player that I've covered in my lifetime and one of the greatest hitters in the history of Major League Baseball, talking about 150 years worth of history, and a guy who's in the same sentence in terms of production with Babe Ruth. And it took me 7 years to earn his trust. If I had to do it again, I think I probably could have done it in 1 or 2 years with him. But if I can connect with a guy again from a different culture, a different background, that was the biggest star in the game, that was very leery and not trusting of others, impossible to connect with. A guy that I despised for a lot of years because I didn't understand why he wouldn't talk to me. To then get to the point where he would do anything that I asked of him. I mean, the line that Albert Pujols gave me was, in the end, was there a lot of people that pull me in a lot of different directions. There are a lot of people that want something from me. Once I trust you, I'll do anything for you. So to me, the pitch to those event planners is that we all deal with rejection. I know how to make that connection. I know how to teach them how to build that trust.
Nice. What I'm getting is that, like, if you're a company and organization who's looking for a speaker, and you didn't ask me to pitch a commercial, but what I'm hearing is that
after you've hired Devin,
well, I mean, if you want to build a strong culture of trust and be able to like build trust immediately with maybe new hires, right, or new clients, mm-hmm. New partners. And also be able to just develop that factor of trust over the long haul so that we're breaking down silos, there's more cohesiveness. Who doesn't want this in their company, right? From a fun baseball-type perspective that's not a baseball speech, you can help organizations achieve that so they can achieve better results and hit a bigger bottom line together. I mean, it trickles all the way down, right? I mean, that's it. So get this guy while he's available. Get him.
I'm taking Devin on the road with me.
Well, I want to, as we start to wrap up, just two questions I want to throw back to you from your podcast, if you'll let me do this, which yeah. I know you give your guests time yes. to think about it. But just your biggest strikeout and your biggest home run, because you mentioned failure. So I'd love to just hear more about how your failure, what you've learned from that.
So I've thought about this a lot, and of course, most of my guests say some version of this too with the swing and miss. I've swung and missed a million times. And so I can go in a lot of directions. I just told you the Albert Pujols story. I think that's probably my biggest, because I for the better part of 7 years, I had nothing with the guy. I mean, maybe one out of every 10 times he might say yes. But I mean, I held my breath and my chest was pounding, heart pounding, waiting for that rejection every single time. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it made me better. I don't know if I'd be further along than I was. I mean, it felt awfully sweet once I moved on to Kansas City and he moved on to Anaheim for $300 million mm-hmm. or whatever he got. And to be able to get the one-on-one interview and have people say, boy, how did you get that? You know, mm-hmm. how are you getting this exclusive interview?
Yeah.
And so it gave me a lot of credibility. But I think for me, what I learned from that swing and miss with Albert is that we often misunderstand others along the way, especially when they don't give you what you want or you know, they keep you from getting to what you want. It's very easy to either not like someone or wonder why they're being this or this or this or this or this. And what I learned was that for an Albert Pujols, all right, guy that hit over 700 home runs. You know, we're talking Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron territory here. He's one of only four that ever hit 700 home runs. That we can't possibly know what it's like to walk in someone else's shoes. But when you make a little bit of an attempt to understand their life a little bit better, when you make a little bit of an attempt to go deeper than where you're trying to go, instead of it being about you and I want to get here, can you understand what they're going through? Can you understand that they're going home to family issues just like the rest of us, and a sick child, or, you know, maybe a fight with a wife, or, you know, a sick mother, or whatever it might be, right? That just because their name might be Will Ferrell, or just because their name might be Albert Pujols, doesn't mean they're immune to the challenges of life. Mm-hmm. Just because they have all the money in the world, just because they can hit a ball faster and harder than anyone else. And I think once you understand that, you can go anywhere if you go about things the right way. And no one ever taught me that. There were no classes on this. And so, you know, they taught us how to set up cameras and lights like Zach did for us here. And at one point, I knew how to do that better than I do it now. But, you know, they taught us
I noticed you didn't help at all. You just kind of stood and watched. No, yeah, like no, I did. No. Zach's like, really, guys? It's all me?
Listen, I used to have to do all this stuff. And it's not that it's beneath me in any way. I think I've had enough, you know, photographers and engineers and all that have said to me, not leave.
Please, right,
leave
don't
us alone.
Touch it.
Don't touch it. Just don't, please. Okay, fine. I understand. So, I wish from that swing and miss, and a lot of swings and misses over and over and over and over yeah. and over again. You know what they say, like, if learn from your mistakes. Well, I wasn't learning anything. All right, the guy doesn't like me. Well, I don't like him. it's a pain covering a superstar that won't give you the time of day. And it never dawned on me that it was potentially my fault, that I didn't know how to make that connection. So the lesson learned is, before you put someone on a pedestal, it's very easy to put people on a pedestal. Don't have to be an Albert Pujols level. Right. The comparison game that you talked about, I could put you on a pedestal because, oh my gosh, I can't do what Devin's doing on stage. Mm-hmm. Why would anybody hire me when he could do everything that he's juggling and doing all these magic tricks and his energy is off the charts? I'm never going to be that. How am I going to do that? Instead of putting you on a pedestal, instead of putting Albert on a pedestal, how about getting to know them a little bit better? And then suddenly you reap the rewards of that relationship.
Yeah. Man, that's so great. As you were talking, it made me think, just love, you know, like love covers over a multitude of sins. I mean, and it's whoever's sins that are. And I think that's part of what can build trust. You can build people's trust, right? If you're showing them, hey, I'm going to give you grace if you drop the ball. I'm not going to blame you. I'm not going to gossip about you. I'm going to come to you directly with any kind of problems. 100%. Let's work on this relationship. You know, so you said you kind of didn't learn at the time, but at the end, as you look back, you learned a huge lesson.
No question.
Right. And so that's the beauty of it.
I mean, I wish I'd figured it out sooner, but I think I learned more by not figuring it out sooner.
Wow, man, that's deep. Yeah. That's crazy. Like, the delayed lesson had value, right? That's crazy.
There's, I don't know if I could find this or not. I wrote down a quote. I'm a quote guy. And that's one of the beauties of sports, too, is that oftentimes you see those quotes come up during, you know, just during a tough moment in sports. And it was the, I'm doing the good old stall here. Okay,
I love it, man. All right.
This would just be like live
Zach
TV
will put
for
in
me.
Music and, you know,
but yeah, the
Zach's like, wait, what?
Jeopardy,
what?
The Jeopardy theme song. No, I've got, okay, so when the Chiefs beat the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship, I heard John Harbaugh say afterwards, you never know what lessons you'll learn from the experiences you have. Mm. And so my challenge on that would just be, look for those lessons, right? Understand that in the heartbreak of failure, that something good will come of it. And you may learn it later, but if you're really observant in the moment, you might see what that is, and it becomes very powerful.
I mean, you ask what else is possible. This is a hard situation. My career is now affected because of it in a negative way, but it's like, what else is possible? What if this is growing me in some way? You know, that's the great thing about always thinking possibilities. So awesome. So your home runs are honestly in a lot of your lessons that you've learned, but is there one home run you want to share with us we haven't gotten a glimpse of yet?
You know what I think it is, and because it's very easy – I think like the home run question for me and for you, like the home run question could be something like, what's the greatest magic trick you've ever done, right? And I'm sure I asked you something like that. And what's the greatest interview you've ever done? And the greatest game, the greatest this, great. And those are fun. But I think for me, it was starting this speaking business. And the reason why I say that is, so I came to Kansas City from St. Louis in 2008, and it was the first time that I was a non-salaried employee, basically meaning I'm going to come here, have more responsibility, I'm going to be on every game, travel with the team, I'm going to make the money that I did in my last place over 6 months. You don't have the benefits and all that. I'm a freelance, essentially. Mm-hmm. You got 6 months to do whatever you want, and I didn't find that what I wanted. I was doing random games, you know, a college game here, a high school game there, and it was something to get off the couch. And I bumped into some friends and they said, what are you up to? And I'm, you know, just a game here and I'm speaking to some golf course management association next week. Oh, do you do a lot of that? Not really. I mean, not usually. And I said, well, you could start a business and you can do well with that. You know how to speak and all that. And I didn't know such a thing as this world, your world exists. Mm-hmm. I thought a speaker was like Tony Robbins, and we'd all love to do that too, but not everybody could be Michael Jordan. And so, you know, the rest of us can live a really good life in this pro world and do well and make an impact and take care of our families. And so I call it the home run because what it did for me, Devin, was that I'd never been in business for myself. I'd never been an entrepreneur. Okay, I'm a freelance TV guy. That here are the games you're working, and that it's not like running a business. So, yeah, I started to learn how to run a business and started the podcast and wrote the book and all these type of things. And suddenly it's this tiny little media company, if we want to call it that. But what I figured out in starting this in late 2016, which then turned into the 2017 baseball season, was that I was going to work, meaning Kauffman Stadium or around the country, to baseball games every single day with a different perspective. It made me a better reporter because I started going selfishly and saying, what can I learn today? Who can I talk to today that can give me something to bring to an audience on stage? What can I learn today that I could share to make others better? That enabled me, at a time I've been doing this for a while now, to sharpen my skills, to look at things differently, to be more curious. All the things that I needed to do to be a good reporter that I was doing fine. But it started to push me into deeper ways and digging a little bit deeper and building stronger relationships. It made me a better television broadcaster. That wasn't the intent. But in trying to help others, it made me more focused. And the two kind of play off each other right now.
That's crazy. Yeah, that there was like this reciprocity between what you brought to the stage and then what the stage brought to life even for you, you know, and made you better because now you're more hyper aware of these things sharing now. Am I doing that? Right? Am I walking the talk?
So, and look, the bulk of what I find out every single day, it's a long season, 2 to 3 stories every single day times 160, and the bulk of them will never make the stage. Most of them won't. But it just, it forced me to dig deeper. Yeah. And that makes for better broadcasts. That makes for better information for my television audience. The television audience isn't all that different than our audience on stage. The difference is the television audience is a little bit more entertainment. And they want to be updated on their team and get some fun stories. And then the you know, stage audience is more about, what can I take back to work to be better? What can I take back to my life to be better? But in the end, you're affecting people's lives.
Yeah. What I love too, I think about like anyone who's listening, you know, whatever position you're in of leadership, of influence, I think of parenting. When I'm telling my kids to behave, act a certain way, I'm like, well, now I've got to do that, right? Because they're going to, it's that old saying, they're not going to do what you say, they're going to do what you do. And so I love how that comes back on us.
And I think that, to your point, Devin, we all have the chance to do that. So, you know, I like to encourage people too to say, like, you don't have to be a great magician. You don't have to be a sports personality in front of a television camera that gets to go into these locker rooms. Everything that you talk about and I talk about, anybody can do. And I talk about being curious. I talk about wanting to know people's stories and seeing how they can help with others. Well, you can walk around your office wherever you're at and get to know people better on a deeper level. And it's going to make you certainly better in building that trust. And you may learn things that you could share with others and mentor and on and on. I mean, it's the gift that never stops giving if you're paying attention. So this is not just a how to be a better broadcaster or how to – it applies to any walk of life.
Yeah. That's great. Joel, thanks for coming on today. Really appreciate this. I know you all have gotten something out of that from the second we started to the second we stopped. So appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Devin, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the breakfast tacos.
Absolutely.
Give a shout out to Etc. here. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
It'd be fun to do it again sometime too, man.
Always happy to do it.
Awesome. Well, hey, everybody, Joel Goldberg. Remember to go to YouTube to get the full experience. One thing you can help us to on Apple or Spotify, you know, give us that 5-star rating. If it's genuine, give us a comment. That'll help us spread this message to more people. And did I say thanks to Etc. again yet? Did I say that?
You did.
There you go. Joel said it. Well, thank you, Etc. Shiny. We really appreciate it. Thanks to our new producer, Zach, who is just crushing it right now. So this is going to be the best looking podcast yet. We're going to end it with just like the question you ask when you embrace a possibility mindset, which is, what else is possible? So I'll say, what else? You'll say, is possible. You ready?
Let me write that down. Yes, I got it.
Because you're a script guy. You need it.
Give me my script.
All right. So remember to never stop asking the question, what else
is possible?
See you next time. Hey, sorry, afterthought, P.S., right? He didn't tell me to do this. I was like, Joel, I forgot to mention your website. So JoelGoldbergMedia.com to connect with Joel and especially to book him as a speaker. JoelGoldbergMedia.com. We'll put it in the show notes. And that's it. See you next time.